Welcome to Bergenomics, demystifying economics with Ross McDowell.
Welcome to the Bergenomics podcast, where we demystify the economics behind the everyday events, products, and policies that are running our lives. Modern life revolves around our internet and mobile telecommunications usage. Who provides those services, at what cost, and their reliability are hot topics. The latest technical innovation to provide Australians with their internet and phone services are low Earth orbit satellites. To demystify low Earth orbit satellites, or LEOs, which is a whole lot easier to say, is Mr. Paul Budd, one of Australia's leading independent telecommunications commentators. You'll have seen Paul many times on our television news services providing analysis on what's happening or maybe what's not happening in Australia's telecommunications industry. Paul, welcome to Bergenomics.
Thank you, Ross.
Now, currently there are huge geographic and economic gaps in who receives the internet all around the world. Low Earth orbit satellites appear to be the answer to filling those gaps. What are low Earth orbiting satellites and why are they so revolutionary?
Yeah, Ross, I think most people will, of course, know what satellites are, and they've seen pictures of them or even video of them. And, they've been floating around the Earth for, since 1950s, 60s, around that time. And until recently, they were mainly used for broadcasting. So if you watch the Olympics or, some world soccer or God knows whatever around the world, then most of the time that was beamed from that location through all over the world with satellites. Satellites have increasingly become common. They really start also to take up in the telecommunications industry first, basically for long distance, what they call backhaul. So in you can say big pipes in the air to transmit traffic from continents from one continent to another, etc. But slowly also these satellites became used for mobile communication, particularly, of course, in regional areas. I would say since the 1980s, when Australia got their own satellites, the AusSats, at that point in time, telecommunication services, particularly to remote areas, were possible. But those phones were big bricks. Yeah, they were large devices at that point in time. You had basically were transportable. And, you had them in your car, when you were out as a doctor or an engineer out in the bush, you took that sort of an equipment with you. Now, things have changed, of course, dramatically since that time again. And now we've reached what they call, what you already mentioned, the LEOs, the low Earth orbit satellites. So you've got the satellites that we've been used to are higher in the sky. Yeah. So they have a further distance from the Earth, and therefore there's always a delay in the signal that goes up and down from you to the satellite and back. Now with broadcasting, that wasn't the problem. It started to become a problem with telecommunications. But then if you go one step further, if you start talking about broadband, that really becomes an issue. So if you can go lower towards the Earth, then the signal doesn't have to travel that far anymore, and you can get, therefore, a better signal, for example, for broadband. Now, that sort of technology has been developed in the last, 10 years to a large extent. There were some earlier trials, which, it's now actually becoming, in the last couple of years, last 5 years, it's becoming actually commercial viable, thanks to some of these moguls in America that are putting, billions and billions and billions of dollars into these sort of ventures. Yeah, it's Tesla, it's Amazon, that sort of companies are leading that new development. Now, these satellites are actually as big as a shoebox. So they are not big satellites. They're very small satellites. And what you see happening, you therefore need literally tens of thousands of these little satellites in order to provide the coverage that you want to reach, particularly if you start looking at global coverage in that area. So that new technology has been very successful. It's also used in Australia. You know, thousands of people in Australia are already using it. It's hurting the NBN because, you know, it's a much better broadband service that you get from those satellites than from the NBN. So you really start seeing the, that now we're reaching it in a situation where these satellites are, the coverage is big enough. So you get have good coverage. And at the same time, you know, the prices are relatively okay. They're still on the high end.
We'll get
but
to
that's where we are now.
So with these satellites, are there enough satellites, for example, to cater for all of Australia's internet and telecommunications needs?
Yeah, what's happening, of course, is that those companies have to continuously send up rockets with the that bring those satellites into the sky. Now, initially, they started with rockets that could put up 10 or 15 or 20 satellites at the same time. They have increased that. So now you get situations where 30, 40, 50 of these satellites in a rocket and then put it into orbit. So you need, because you need an enormous amount of these satellites, you also need an efficient way of bringing them into orbit, yeah? And that requires, you know, that you actually need to be able to have payloads of 50, 100 or of these little satellites that you start putting in. Now, to answer your question, yes, we now have enough of these little satellites in the air to cover Australia. And of course, in particular, you talk about regional Australia in this respect, yeah? But also some people in some of the towns in Australia. I would not necessarily say in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, etc. But if you're on the edge of big cities, your NBN signal might not be good enough. So you really start seeing that it's encroaching further and further into the Australian market in order to provide a better service as the NBN.
As I understand it, too, the cost of these satellites are between $60,000 and $100,000 each, and then there's the cost to get them to orbit. Elon Musk is a leader in that, and he's got reusable rockets that can do that, so that brings the cost down. How does the cost then at that level, or the cost of the infrastructure at that level, compare then with the cost that we're currently encountering in Australia, for example, to erect 5G towers?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Ross, that the mobile towers are separate. I will come back to that in a minute. It's not replacing the mobile service. It's basically replacing the fixed services, the fixed broadband services in Australia. So it's not a mobile device, it's a fixed device in your house. So yeah, obviously upfront costs are enormous. Yeah. So, you know, you need companies like the one from Elon Musk and Amazon, etc., in order to make that happen. Now, obviously their business models are indicated that once you've got enough coverage, you get enough customers and you get your money back. Yeah, of course there will be competition. There are 3-4 of these systems already in operation. You know, there are all the systems in China. They're setting up their own systems, etc. So it will be interesting to see who will survive. You know, it's unlikely that everybody can survive because the costs are so high. It's not just bringing them up, but every 4 or 5 years you have to replace them. Yeah. So they only last for a small number of years. Now, imagine you've got tens of thousands of these satellites up and you have to start replacing them every 4 or 5 years. That in itself is an enormous exercise with an enormous amount of cost. So it still will have to see, you know, who's going to survive and, you know, if competition is going to bring costs down. At the moment, the costs are higher than the NBN. So, you know, there is definitely a cost issue attached to it. And then if you start talking about global services and you start talking about, you know, particularly countries in Africa and Asia, you know, then, you know, the costs, you know, are at this point in time prohibitive for ordinary people to use it in that sort of low-income countries. But still, you know, schools, hospitals, you know, and professional people can in those countries also.
And looking at what its competition in Australia is, currently you can get with Starlink, which is Musk's company, $139 a month, and that gets you a speed of 100 and, well, the ACCC to test across all the different providers and speeds. I'm sure you're aware of it. And so the Starlink, Musk's outfit, at $139 a month, and they say that you're going to get 100 megabits per second. They were tested by the ACCC at getting 102. The NBN on their 100 megabit plan at $80 a month, ACCC found that the average speed is only 52 megabits per second. And SkyMaster, which is the high satellite service provided by, I think it's the NBN, for $200 a month, they're saying you're going to get 50 megabits per second. For people out in the bush that supposedly aren't serviced well by the other telcos, and ACCC, and they were getting 25 megabits per second. So it would seem that the LEO system of satellites is really the only effective company that can deliver what they're stating. How does that affect the competition in Australia? Why would I want to go to use an NBN service if I'm going to pay for 100 megabits, they only get 52.
Yeah. And that's what you see happening at the moment, Ross. People are voting with their feet and are, just massively changing over from the NBN to the new satellite services. And Skylink, of course, is the biggest one at the moment that people are using. So, yes, absolutely. I mean, we've been complaining about the NBN now for more than a decade. And people are getting fed up with, the service that is not delivering what people want. But even if it is limited in what it can deliver, and people are saying, yeah, sorry, but that's just not good enough for us. We want better services. And it's highly unlikely that NBN Co. will be able, with its current satellites, to improve that service, to provide better services. It's unfortunately a limitation of the technology that they use. And therefore, the Skylink services, are of course continuously maneuvering the NBN in what it can offer. And as you include also what you are saying, if you go the people that want the higher level of services, yeah, then Skylink becomes really a competitive, is very competitive in its pricing as well.
So if I was the NBN, why would I continue to spend money on infrastructure? Or if I was Telstra, why would I continue to spend money on land-based infrastructure when I could just simply repurchase what Elon Musk's company and the other companies are offering and provide a better service?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Ross, we're talking about regional communication. We don't talk about metropolitan services. Okay. The satellites will be unable to deliver enough capacity for, millions of people concentrated in cities, yeah, to provide a service via the satellite. That's just physically impossible. So we talk about the regional areas, and there you're totally correct, that it's it doesn't make sense with the LEOs in place to actually start looking at yet another set of the big $100 million satellites that NBN Co. now has in the air. It doesn't make sense to try and bring cables, for hundreds of kilometers to farms or, in communities. It absolutely doesn't make sense. So, in that respect, yes, the only solution is basically the LEOs. And Telstra has already basically said, we are going to use that in regional areas. NBN Co. Already a year ago started to review its satellite operations, and it's highly likely that they will also start using the LEO satellites for their next generation of satellite services to regional areas.
If I remember correctly, when the great NBN idea was floated by Kevin Rudd, the whole point of it was to equalise Australia's usage of the internet from the bush to the city, which has obviously never happened. Yet all of a sudden, there's a competitor that can do it, and now the NBN are buying their service, yet for years and years, nothing's really been said about the bush or the people that can't get hold of it, which was part of the original charter. Why is that? What's gone on there?
Yeah, that's true. We're also, and I was actually involved in the strategic sort of discussions that took place between 2005 and 2010 in, you know, what the NBN should look like. We had some 400 people from the industry involved in all sorts of discussions about telehealth and infrastructure and smart cities. And, you know, there were lots and lots of people from the industry all looking at what this NBN should be, what can we do with it. And based on that, it was decided that up to something like 95% of the country should get a fiber optic network. That would be a quantum leap to the copper-based network that was in place. So it really was a big change that would happen. And you would really, with fiber optics, you can actually get this fantastic signal and you could deliver, you know, 100 to 200 gigabytes of information to people. Then we got a change of government, and then the government with Abbott, you know, said, no, we don't want the NBN. And then, you know, we want to kill it. And then Malcolm Turnbull was able to save the NBN, but he said, you know, it's too costly. And the costs were at that point in time, when we talked about the 2005, 2010, around $43 billion. Malcolm Turnbull said, we can do it for $25 billion. Then it became a second-rate network. The costs, by the way, are now running towards the $60 billion, you know, that we already are spending. So it was a political football, and the previous government really messed it up, and they started to cobble up all sorts of old technologies together in order to save cost. And then you end up with a second-rate network where people are complaining. And, you know, of course, in the end, even the coalition saw the light and started to say, oh, we have to replace all this cobbled up technology with fiber. But yeah, then by that time, we were 15 years later and we had lost 15 years. And actually, you know, now what you see happening, particularly once again for the bush, it doesn't apply to the cities. In the cities, we absolutely need fiber to the home. No other way, no other technology possible. But outside the cities, the LEOs are going to be an enormous new infrastructure that is going to provide excellent services to people outside the metropolitan areas.
When do you think that the LEOs would also be able to cover the metropolitan areas?
Never. It's mathematics. The capacity that you can use, yeah, in order to send signals down, that is the problem. There's simply not enough capacity to in concentrated areas as the cities, yeah, to then have, you know, zettabytes of information that needs to be beamed down, yeah, because of the millions of people that are using broadband. Yeah. It's simply not possible, not through mobile technology, not through satellite technology. The only solution there is fiber to the home.
You're also saying even a 5G network couldn't service metropolitan areas in terms of our needs, that it has to come through a wire. Because a lot of people have said, well, look, I guess they look at the mobile phone, they go, gee, 5G, look how quick it is, terrific off a mobile phone. Why aren't we using this technology? Because you can get to some limited extent as home broadband in terms of Wi-Fi for home. Why are we, again, having lots of towers and lots of land-based infrastructure if this 5G system is available? But you're saying you can't use that system for the home because it doesn't have the capacity.
Yeah, Ross, there are two issues. There's the technology and there's the cost. Yeah, you can say, why aren't we all driving Rolls Royces? Everybody would drive, would love to drive Rolls Royce. We can't afford it. It's just too costly. But if you would like to have, if you would use your mobile service in the way that you would use your normal broadband, your mobile bill will going to be hundreds of dollars a month. Yeah. So yes, technically it's possible that you use your 5G connection. And, you know, if you every night do Netflix and what have you, and several kids in the household are using it for study and games and got no whatever, that's possible, this 5G. But then your bill goes up to a couple of hundred dollars a month. If you would use a fiber optic network, then your bill would be $70-$80. Yeah. So it's far more cost effective in a metropolitan area to actually use fiber optic networks. It doesn't make sense to use mobile or satellite because, you know, the capacity that is available through these networks have to be limited. And how do you limit it? By making the price higher. Yeah. And then, you know, the 5G network can survive because not everybody is then using it. If you charge a few hundred dollars a month, yeah, then, you know, then it limits the number of people that are going to use it, and your 5G infrastructure can survive. If you would make 5G available for $50 or $60 a month and everybody would start using it, the whole network would collapse. It cannot handle that level of capacity in a mobile network.
And you couldn't develop that level of capacity in a mobile network? It's just impossible to do at this stage?
Yes, it's just, you use spectrum, radio spectrum, yeah? And the radio spectrum, of course, is limited. Now, what they are doing now with the spectrum, you know, if you go to very low spectrum, that is, for example, used for the television, analog television, it follows the contours of the land, yeah? And it can go enormous distances, yeah? And you can use your television service. However, if you start using interactive services, these low spectrum rates can't use that. You can't use it for that. So you have to go to higher radio spectrum levels. And when you go to higher radio spectrum levels, you need far more towers. Yeah. So, you know, we went with 2G for thousands of towers. We went to 4G for 10,000s of towers. If you go to 5G, you talk about hundreds of thousands of towers that are needed in order to get the signal across. Yeah. So it is a matter of the closer you are to a mobile station, 5G station, the better signal you have. And therefore you need literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of mobile towers if you want to cover that area. But still, you will have that capacity problem. You still have the problem that you can't do it. What you could do is bring the fiber optic network, yeah, to every street corner and then put your 5G on. Then the combination of fiber, yeah, basically to the front of your door, plus a wireless connection, that has some sort of scenario that are possible. But then you need a full fiber optic network, all of those hundreds of thousands of mobile towers, yeah, in your streets, close to your home, in order to create that same network. So then it becomes a cost, and find out what the costs are. Yeah. Is it then easier to bring fiber just through the street to your home? Or do you want the last 50 or 100 meters to be done by a wireless system?
Okay.
So that's the engineers and the finance and the economists are looking at the fiber optic network in cities to be fiber to the home or fiber to the curb. Yeah.
And that seems to be the whole problem with the NBN, and in terms of what you're saying, is that to be able to provide what was originally promised, it's not an economic proposition. It does kind of work. It hasn't worked, and it's continuing not to work from a business model point of view. There's a NBN debt facility, basically $57 billion, saying what it cost to build the NBN. That's nearly $2,200 for every Australian. Yet the Productivity Commission have valued the NBN as a business as only being worth $19.5 billion. And that's a big difference between $57 billion and $19.5 billion. Of that original $57 billion that it cost to build the NBN, $21 billion was in private debt, and the rest of it was the taxpayer funded. We've seen recently the government has written off $31 billion from that enterprise just with a stroke of a pen. In other words, they just write off the complete value of the taxpayer contribution to the NBN. That's a pretty radical and amazing thing to do, don't you think?
Yeah. You know, I think what we, you know, if you look at, if you, I mean, of course, we know where we are, unfortunately, yeah. That's the situation. But if you go back, yeah, at that point in time, if you go back to 20 years ago when we started talking about this, yeah, then we were saying, okay, what is this? Why are we putting the NBN in place? Is that for more games or more porno or more movies or whatever? No, we want e-health, we want productivity, we want business services. You know, that's why we want it. Yeah. So it becomes an enormous asset for the country. I mean, you could not run this country anymore, yeah, socially and economically, without having access, good quality access to the internet. The country would economically collapse,
yeah,
if that was no longer the case. So the benefits are not your $50 or $80 or $100 that you pay every month to NBN Co or Telstra or whoever,
yeah.
The benefits are that we now have a country that is far more efficient, far more effective, can do all sorts of things with the digital technology, digital economy that we couldn't do before we had this network. So it should be looked at as a national asset rather than how much money can I make from an NBN through subscriptions. Yeah, the real value is the billions and billions of dollars in economic benefits and social benefits that you get out of the NBN. So that is, I think, the way that we should have looked at it in the beginning, rather than how can we make this a profit-making, machine to for NBN Co or Telstra or Optus or whoever. Yeah.
Okay, I understand that, and it's obviously that's the whole reason why we have governments. One of the reasons is to provide things that society can't afford or our private enterprise system doesn't want to provide because it's not profitable. And in this case, we tried to make NBN profitable by getting a rate of return. I think it was 7% for the NBN, and it ended up only being 3% because the consumers would not pay the monthly subscriptions that were required to make it a 7% return. And so we then do the write down, is what you're saying. And that makes it a reasonable going concern in terms of an accounting point of view as a set of accounts.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a bit perplexed though. If we've got this fantastic asset that we need as a society, why are we bothering to have a reasonable set of accounts? Why don't we do, for example, we don't do that with the Defence Force, we don't do that with the education system, yet we seem to need then to justify it with telecommunications. What's the motivation for writing off $31 billion for this enterprise, the NBN, if it is so important? Why not just say, hey, it cost us $57 billion and we as a country are so much better off and we've got everything as a result of it. You should all be happy. Why is the government saying, oh, we need to write $31 billion off?
I think, it's political, Ross. I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have politics and the $31 billion is not really a write-off. They are deferring it to 2030,
yeah,
and then they start looking what we have to do with that money, etc. So it's all political backflipping and things like that in order to go to a city. Of course, everybody understands that the way that it's a political situation. We didn't get the network that we planned 20 years ago. We got a cobbled up second-rate network, yeah. So now suddenly, we face the music and say that cobbled up network is not good enough.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it costs us a hell of a lot more money. Now, then you have to ask yourself, who's going to pay for that? Yeah. Is it the government, through taxpayers, or is it the users, through subscriptions? Now, if you increase the subscriptions, then as we already see, then, people are going to say, we can't afford it. Yeah. And people are not using the network in the way that we envisaged, it would be much better if everybody starts using the top quality network and do it for their business and for their healthcare and education and all of that. Limiting that because of the fact that the government has spent too much money and now we either have to raise the prices of the NBN so people can't use the full extent of the network. Yeah, that's also a silly issue. Yeah, so it's a political issue. And it's the fault of the government, the fault of the government who made these mistakes in the past. And now we're facing the music. And it looks like that the only way to fall is that in one way or another, the government fills the gap, in whatever way, writing off or whatever. I totally agree with you. At the very beginning, we should have said this is a nation building exercise. Like we built roads, like we built hospitals, like we built, electricity and water and gas and what have you. Yeah. These are national assets. And we all know that the broadband network, the internet, is an absolutely essential asset for the country to run. So why not saying that? Why not coming up and say, yes, this is important for our country. And therefore, exactly what you're saying, let's pay the bill for it, yeah?
And so then we're left with our $21 billion of private debt holders of the NBN. Do you think that perhaps the government may have a feeling that if we can write down the enterprise value, it might be more attractive to sell off the NBN to maybe the existing private debt holders and you move a political problem off your plate?
Yeah, and I think that is also the intention. The intention is that once the NBN is in the right shape, whatever that might be, yeah, then the government will consider to privatize the NBN. Now, obviously, you know, the discussion that we are having, Ross, it's clear that there will be nobody coming up with $50 or $60 billion and say, hey, you know, here you've got this bag of money for this beautiful NBN that you've built up. The Productivity Commission has already indicated how much it really is worth. Now, let's say, you know, let's say it's more, let's say it's $25 billion or $30 billion that in the end, you know, it's worth. But that still means, yeah, that whoever going to buy it is not going to buy it for $60 billion, yeah? So yes, if you want to privatize it, and, you know, it's typically political, push the whole thing forward, yeah? 5 years, 10 years, and then, you know, see what happens in by that time. So that's how politics works, yeah, in a situation like this. Nobody wants to be the party, you know, that is going to face the music and pay the bill. So, you know, that's the sort of thing. Let's hope something happens in 5 or 10 years' time, and it's no longer my problem, yeah?
The concept of the NBN is living proof that we had a need as a country that wasn't commercially viable for someone else to step in and provide. And so it had to be done if we wanted to have that degree of internet connectivity and had to take the hit. But then that's politically unviable. And so kind of like when we developed the phone system in 1901 and then through the Postmaster General's Department and then through Telstra and Telecom and its iterations of different names, you end up with a market that's very fragmented with a relatively small population, and it's uneconomic for private enterprise to make a buck like the airline. And is that the situation that we're in, that people are trying to fight for, companies are trying to fight for a buck, and it's just too hard to do in this area in Australia with 26 million people?
If you go back to around 2000, 2005, when the whole discussion was, what are we going to do with broadband? Then Telstra came up with a plan and say, we will be able to get you 25 megabits. We pay altogether, when I can't exactly remember, $20-30 billion for it. But we then want from the government a guarantee that we can charge $90 a month, yeah, for a number of years, yeah, in order to recoup the money. So that was obviously, you know, not something that the government was interested in. This was the coalition government at that point in time. So they said, no, you know, that's, you know, we don't want to see a 25 megabit sort of service for 5-10 years, you know, to be paid for by, well, for people that pay $90 a month. That's not going to work. So that was the reason why at a certain point, the government decided, okay, yeah, it looks like it doesn't make sense to have 2 or 3 fiber optic networks running through your street. It doesn't make sense to have 3 electricity networks through your street, or water systems, or gas. So the same applies to broadband. It doesn't make sense. Nobody's going to build, you know, Telstra, Optus, and Vodafone are not going to overbuild each other with fiber optic network. That doesn't make sense. Everybody agreed. Telstra agreed, Vodafone agreed, Optus agreed. That's not going to happen. So therefore, let's build 1 fiber optic network on a wholesale basis. So NBN can't sell to retail, to us consumers. And then Telstra, Optus, and Vodafone, and all us, yeah, who then actually use that infrastructure and build their own products and services on top of that and sell that to the people in Australia. So that makes total sense, because we agreed, everybody agreed, yeah, that there would be no, it would be not a competition issue. You know, nobody's going to compete. If somebody rolls out a network like Telstra and start charging $90 a month for, you know, 25 megabits, yeah, I mean, that's just, nobody's going to use it. Yeah. So that's why the clear indication was it was not economic viable to build a fiber optic network to all of Australians, because Telstra only wanted to build it to roughly 50% of the population. So, you know, that point in time, the government decided not. And the industry agreed with that and said, okay, one fiber optic network. But unfortunately, politics came in the way. The coalition took over and said, we don't want to, we want to know about it. And we, you know, we make it, we cobble up some old technologies and make it work for $25 billion, which didn't work. So that's where we are now.
It's interesting that Telstra continues to talk about servicing the people in the bush, yet didn't really service the people in the bush, but now can service the people in the bush by buying someone else's service. Why has it taken so long? If that service was there, you're telling me that service has been available for years. Why has it just now happened in the last 2 weeks that Telstra have said, we're going to buy this service to service the people in the bush? They could have done it years ago. Why now?
Telstra, of course, you know, has been a monopoly for a very long time. I've been involved in several discussions. For example, at a certain stage, I was involved in setting up Smart Grid Australia, where the electricity companies needed fiber optic networks in order to make its network more, you know, better, more reliable, etc. At that point in time, quite a few of the energy companies had fiber optic networks. So we sat down with Telstra and said, Telstra, why are you going to build a network? You know, I remember one was on the East Coast in between Sydney and Brisbane and actually Cairns. Why can't, don't you want to use our networks? You know, you can use our network. And Telstra said, over my dead body, whatever we do, we build our own. Yeah. That has been the mantra for Telstra for decades and decades and decades. They never, ever wanted to use anybody else's sharing infrastructure or whatever. Never, ever. Yeah. Now, obviously, now we get the situation that we don't make telephone calls anymore. You know, we make free mobile calls, free calls over the Skype and WhatsApp and Facebook. We do videos that way, all of that sort of stuff. All these services where we paid for in the past, yeah, has fallen away. Telstra has no income anymore from its traditional sort of telephony business that it had in those days. So it had to change its mind, yeah. Then, of course, Google and Facebook and others took over. Telstra and all the telcos around the world, they're all far too late to enter the digital economy, yeah? So that's why these American companies are now gigantic, because all of those telcos were sitting on their hands, didn't do anything, and these companies started to eat their lunch. Now, at that point in time, you know, at a certain stage, you know, there hasn't been any growth in the telecommunications company for a decade, yeah? So all of these companies, the Telstra's, Optus's, British Telecom, you know, the US companies, the only way to survive is actually to cut cost, cut cost, cut cost, cut cost, cut cost. Yeah, there's no revenue growth, cut cost, profit stays reasonably okay. So that is the problem that these companies face. Now they've reached a situation that they said, okay, it, you know, we are no longer delivering those services. We are now looking at sharing infrastructure. Telstra and TPG were talking together. That was brought by the ACCC. You see all the companies working together and sharing rather than overbuilding each other every single time. And that's where also the LEO situation fits in. And 10 years, 15 years ago, Telstra would have said, we send our own LEOs into the air. Yeah, that's no longer the case. You know, they now are saying, okay, we actually are selling services and we want to use tel infrastructure from companies rather than building it themselves. There's been an enormous change in cultures within Telstra and other companies, you know, to change over from we want to own every little bit of infrastructure to we can actually start looking at sharing infrastructure, using somebody else's infrastructure. So it's a massive change that happened in the telecommunications
industry. Why has it taken so long though, Paul? Why, if they're promising people in the bush, we're going to give you great service for the internet, and they were able to do it by 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, subcontracting LEO services. Why didn't they do it then? Why have they just done it in the last 2 weeks?
Oh, no. The LEOs, I think, Ross, we have to be realistic. Yeah. Yes, they were set up. They were sent up 2 or 3 years ago for the first time, but they didn't have any coverage whatsoever. Yeah. Okay. You know, only, you know, there were only little pockets in Australia where they tested it. Yeah. Beta testing the service. And these pockets, you know, were, you know, that were the only places where you could use it. Now, you know, we now have a coverage big enough for Telstra to say, okay, we can now start selling the service because the coverage is big enough for us to go to our regional customers and offer this service to them.
Now we're coming to the end, and with my all of my experts, I like to ask them the question that equalizes their area of expertise to the simple man, Paul, the man that doesn't understand telecommunications, he doesn't understand economics, but he understands hamburgers. And I love to get my experts to apply their particular area to the effect on the common hamburger. So we're talking about low earth orbiting satellites in terms of internet provision, people in the bush. How will that affect the common hamburger?
The common hamburger, you know, the effect there will be more in because telecommunications and IT are merging together. We see artificial intelligence, we see cloud computing, you know, all sorts of new developments in the IT area. And what you start seeing is that it can become far more efficient to actually produce anything, if it's a hamburger or if it's a microphone or a book or whatever, yeah? So it really becomes an integral part, yeah, the telecommunications, but then in the broader sense with IT becomes a far more integral part of our lives. You know, if you look at climate change, if you look at all these big problems that we are facing, we humans have a limitation in how we can do it. We do need the technology to do things better. And that applies to the small hamburger, as well as to climate change or geopolitical issues. Or, you know, medical, you know, look at the pandemic, what technology did there in a year. So that's the benefits of these new infrastructure that we have, yeah, to everybody. You know, if you read a book electronically, if you, you know, can make better products, if you can market your product better, yeah, because you now don't have to have salesmen around, you can be in Australia and use the internet to sell your whatever product overseas or whatever, yeah. That is the real benefit of the sort of telecommunications infrastructure that we are developing as we speak.
Paul, thank you very much for joining me. You have enlightened me a lot about the NBN especially, and about LEOs, and about the importance of telecommunications for building our country's economic model, because you're really outlining, saying, and yes, you have an A-grade internet system, data exchange system. We'll never get there. Maybe a lot of people are missing that, and maybe that message has never been communicated as well as you've just done it just then. So thank you very much for joining me. And as LEOs progress, I'm sure you and I will talk again, because I think that's going to be another area where we're going to have a whole lot of companies jumping in. It's going to be very competitive. Pricing will change. A lot of things will happen. Costs will fall. So I think it's certainly a watch this space area.
Looking forward to the follow-up discussion, Ross. It's an interesting field we are talking about.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My thanks to my expert guest, Mr. Paul Wood, one of Australia's leading experts on our telecommunications sector, who helped demystify low Earth orbit satellites. This is my takeout from our podcast. Low Earth orbit satellites are a technology that solves the problem that both NBN and before them Telstra never seemed able to. That is, high-speed, reliable internet and phone services for every Australian, whether they live in the outback or a metropolitan poor reception area. However, low Earth orbit satellites will never have the capacity to provide the same service to the millions of metropolitan users. Not even the 5G network has the spectrum capacity to replace the volume of internet service needed for metropolitan home broadband services. While the NBN has never delivered the speed and availability of internet services originally promised and has run insanely over budget, it has delivered the only practical internet system available, without which Australia would quickly become an economic basket case. I'd like to thank Ashley Neal, Development Manager for Space and Satellite for Vocus Communications, for his guidance and knowledge, and also Ology Creative for their graphic design assistance with the Bergonomics podcast. If you haven't already, please follow the Bergonomics podcast on your favourite podcast channel. We have a webpage where you can join our email list, and we are on LinkedIn and Instagram if you'd like to follow us there.